track, get my money to my baby to spend. So Lord, I'm going uptown to the Hall of River to drown. Dirty water gonna cover me over, and I'm not gonna make a sound. Good times come and they go, even a good man will break. He'll let his troubles bury him whole, even though he knows what's at stake. So I'm taking no chances, carrying over while I'm still good in his grace. And I'm no fool, mama, I know the difference between tempted and choosing my fate. So Lord, I'm going uptown to the Harlem River to drown. Dirty water gonna cover me over, I'm not gonna make a
Justin Townes Earl, the title song from Harlem River Blues. Justin died in 2020 of an accidental drug overdose and left behind his widow, Jen Marie, and their three-year-old daughter, Etta. I'm Marcy Finkelstein, and this is Words and Music on Community Radio WMNF, and our words this morning come from Jen Marie. I'm devoting this hour to our conversation, along with songs by and about Justin. His death followed years of addiction, much of which played out on stage. And in fact, just after Harlem River Blues came out, he was arrested at a club, had to postpone his tour and go back into rehab. A few months later, he gave a great concert at the Crowbar in Ybor. I've always remembered him joking about the arrest and people cheering about it. So it caught my eye when Jen Marie posted this to Justin's Facebook page a few months ago. I'm happy to hear about your experiences meeting Justin over the years, but if it includes providing him drugs and getting wasted with him, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to see photos of him with his shirt off or mooning people. She went on to say he was very vocal about his struggles with addiction, so why would anyone aid in that? I reached out to Jen Marie, and she agreed to talk about what fans can do to help or hurt an artist who's battling addiction, and she very generously shared so much more, as you'll hear. I started our conversation by saying it's a sad irony that Justin told us on stage and in his songs that he had addiction problems, but people enabled that addiction because they were fans.
I don't want to place any blame on fans because the community has actually become an incredibly huge support system for me that I did not expect. I am a really private person, and Justin and I both were. We really connected with fans. So it's a real touchy subject because I think people take it the wrong way. But when it comes right down to it, he was very vocal about his struggles and his addictions. He was very vocal his whole life. It was out there in the open. People saw him throughout his career. And if they were paying attention, coming and going in and out of sobriety. And it shocks me to know for a fact that many of his fans, long-term fans too, played a role in it and wanted to connect with him so badly that they wouldn't turn down a drink with him, or they wouldn't refrain from offering him drugs, alcohol, sex, all the things that fall under the addiction categories and things that come along with addiction. I mean, it played a massive role in his life. Their influence and willingness to participate and offer him whatever he wanted And I get that want to connect. He was a charming man in so many ways. It saddens me that it's often over things like drugs and alcohol. People that struggle, they walk a fine line. Some days they're really strong in their sobriety if they are sober. And other days it's really weak, and it just takes that one offer or that one person that opens the door, and it can change the trajectory completely.
I should learn better, old enough to know. Slipping, sliding, feeling low. Yeah, just sit back in bed. Shame for showing me. Slipping, sliding, feeling low. Now I'm waking up. I should never touch the stars, but it shouldn't make any difference more. As long as I keep up appearing, I've been working too hard. I need some time.
Mentioned his struggle, and it sounds like the drugs and alcohol weren't the fundamental problem. They were his way of coping. You said you wish people knew how much he struggled. What was he struggling with, do you think?
I believe through a lot that I've read about addiction, recovery, the trauma, addiction often comes from childhood trauma. It seems to be the most common thread, early childhood trauma. I don't want to point fingers. Justin was really vocal about his childhood, mostly going against his connection with Steve, to be honest. But to me, as I see it, there are two parents and there are two people that are supposed to be responsible when they have a child. And not one person failed Justin. And I'm not trying to talk bad about anyone, but it was not a childhood that gave him the aspects that a young child needs to feel safe in the world, to start learning how to navigate hard moments, which are inevitable. I'm learning this right now with having a five-year-old. I mean, this whole time I've been a parent, it's been something that I've been learning and tending to. Learning how to prepare your child for the hardships in life without fixing things and without buffering things. People choose their priorities. And I think it really started right out the gates with Justin. Somebody told me they felt he was born with a hole in his soul. That struck me so hard and just made me so deeply saddened because I know that Justin, no matter how happy he was, how good his career was going, or how much he was loved by people and myself included, and he had a great home life with me, and he was vocal about that, finally wanting to be home and liking being home. And I'm so happy that I got to be part of that story for him. But deep down, no matter what, he was deeply unhappy. It wasn't about us. It wasn't about his career. I mean, sometimes it was. He had everything, everything that people would think would offer this really full, vibrant, happy life. But there were these undercurrents of, I think, that childhood trauma and his experience in life and the people surrounding him when he was young, coping with drugs and alcohol. It was his model. That's what he saw. That's what he experienced, was the way to do things. And no matter what, he had that undercurrent of deep sadness and deep unhappiness that nothing could ever fill besides maybe his own trauma work and ability to harness it and tend to that. And to do that as a touring musician who's literally traveling 3/4 of the year, and then the off time is writing an album nonstop all day, every day. It doesn't leave a lot of time for continual therapy and a feeling of groundedness.
Well, the Mississippi Delta is shining like a national guitar. I'm following the highway down the river through the cradle of the Civil War. I'm going to Graceland, Graceland, Memphis, Tennessee. I'm going to Graceland. Poor boy pilgrims with families, and we are going to Graceland. And my traveling companion, he's 9 years old, and he's the child of my first marriage. We all will be received in Graceland. She comes back and tells me she's gone now. As if I didn't know that, as if I didn't know my own bed. As if I never noticed the way she combs her hair off her forehead. She says, ooh, love is just a window in your heart. Everybody sees you blown apart, and everybody sees the wind blowing. Whoa, 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 Graceland, I'm going to Graceland. And my traveling companion is ghosts and empty sockets. I'm looking at ghosts of empty tomb. Reasons I cannot explain, there's some part of me wants to see Graceland. There's a girl in New York City, well, she calls herself the human trampoline. Whenever I am falling, flying, tumbling in turmoil, I say, oh, so this is what she means. And she means we're bouncing into Graceland. And she says, losing love is just a window in your heart. Everybody sees you blown apart, and everybody sees the wind blowing. Oh, 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 Graceland, I'm going to Graceland. I may be obliged to defend with love in every ending. Maybe there's no obligations now. I cannot explain, but some part of me wants to see Graceland. I'm going in Graceland. I'm going in Graceland. I'm going to Graceland. I'm going to Graceland.
Justin Townsend, in a single he recorded of Paul Simon's Graceland, I think he really takes that song and makes it his own. More now of my conversation with Jen Marie Earle, widow of Justin Townsend Earle. You have such a deep understanding of Justin. Did you have that from the beginning, or was there a period where you thought maybe you could fix him?
That's a good question. I'd never wanted to fix him or change him. I did hear recently an interview that he did when he was not sober at all in his last year of life. And I don't take what he said at this time as truth at all, but he said, she thought she was going to change me, talking about me. It really shocked me to hear some of the things that he said, because I know in my heart, and I know he knew in his heart, what he was saying wasn't true. He was not in his right mind, because there was not one moment where I ever thought, I want to change him. Not to discredit what his experience was, but we're dealing with somebody that at that time wasn't very sober. So he knew, and he was beating himself up for it. And he was trying to make it right by saying things that were not quite in alignment with what was actually going on. When we got together, he was sober. He was partaking in a lot of weed, which now I don't feel is sobriety at all, but it seemed a lesser offense. I thought he was in a totally different place in his recovery than he actually was, because he was a really great, he didn't mean to, but he was a great actor. He was really good at acting okay and putting out this charismatic persona with me at home and to fans and stuff, where you could see a deep sadness. And I knew him better than anybody, I believe, but I thought he was somewhere else in his recovery. And it became apparent about 7 years into our relationship that there were gaps in his recovery. But the whole time we were together, of course, I just wanted to be a supportive partner. I wanted to be someone that did help make him happier and helped make him think that the world was less awful. The only thing I wanted to change that I wish I could have told him during that time of that interview was, I don't want to change you, but I'd love your habits to stop, because this is what's getting in the way of yourself and us and your relationship with your daughter. Every single facet of your life, your habits are what is now taking over. And you can't just tell someone that that's in the midst of being completely off the wagon and not having sober moments. You can't see eye to eye. You can't communicate that. You usually become a target when you're that close, when you're in that close range of someone struggling like that.
When it's quiet, you hear her engines cry. She blows smoke at her wheels, and her gears pound the steel as they carry her on down the line. Now, I'm sure that you've heard stories, as most of us have. The lunch counter and barbershop queues. She's the ghost of Virginia, and from here up to Richmond, she runs by the light of the moon. Well, a few years back on an old Suffolk road, where it crosses the abandoned rail line, my grandpa claimed that he'd seen a freight train, and it wasn't no sleek streamline. She was coal black and steel, and she screamed as she cut her way clear of the pines. But he swears to this day he can feel the earth shake and smell of smoke when the wind's just right.
see the strangest of sights. She's a ghost of Virginia, bound from Raleigh up to Richmond, and you better stay out of her line. Yeah, you better stay out of her line. Sometimes I go walking through fields where we walked long ago, and the sweet used to be. And them flowers still grow, but they don't smell as sweet as they did when you picked them for me. Yeah, and when I think of you and the love we once knew, I wish we'd go back in time, you ever think back on old memories like that, and do I ever cross your mind?
Justin Townsend right. and yes. Don Landis with Do I Ever Cross Your Mind, the Dolly Parton song. The two toured together, and they recorded it while they were on tour in 2010 or 2011. The band Loose Cattle before that, a New Orleans band, some of the members were also in the Iguanas, with Justin Towns Earl's The Ghost of Virginia from his album Yuma. I'm speaking with Jen Marie Earl. When Justin died, he left behind his wife, Jen Marie, and their then 3-year-old daughter, Etta. And Jen Marie is talking about Justin and the role of fans in his addiction, and also what she wants to do to help others. More of my conversation now with Jen Marie Earl. You toured with him some. I remember you coming to WMNF with Justin. Did it help when you were on the road with him?
Oh, yeah. So I was on the road with him for 6-7 years. He was as balanced as he could ever be. I think you can see it real clear if you look at photos of him from 2012-ish. And we got married in 2013. Throughout mid-2018, he was very clearly the happiest he'd ever been. He told me that right before he died. Those were his best years. We were a team. I sold my business and my house. I had a side job too that helped pay our way when there were slumps in shows or advances. I loved being out there on the road with him. It was hard because he was the performer. He stayed up super late. I would stay up as late as I could, but I didn't always see the whole show out. I tried, and most of the time I did, and I was waiting on the wings for him. But then he was so amped after a show, it took him a long time to wind down. And then he'd sleep late, and I'd explore wherever we were the next morning, usually by myself, which was kind of hard. We'd explore together once he woke, but then we were off to the next place. It was tough, but it was also just a really beautiful time. Even though I was away from my community that I had built around my business in Utah, I really missed that. But I was building community with his fans and just people that I was meeting on the road, because I would do his merch and talk to people. Some people knew who I was and some people had no clue. And I loved that anonymity too. And every once in a while, somebody would ask me for an autograph. And I was like, whoa, 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 no, I'm nobody. Come on. I'm just selling the merch. Like, you know, it was so fun. It was just a really neat time. I I miss it. I loved it. I love seeing him on stage every night. I would never get sick of that lifestyle with him. I don't think I would do it again with anyone else, but it certainly was really special.
You mentioned selling your business. You were a yoga teacher, is that right?
It was Pilates and gyrotonic, and then we had yoga in the studio as well. I did that for 20 years. I worked a lot with ballet dancers, U.S. ski team members, because I grew up ski racing as well, real physical competitive background. It was like my form of art. I created this really neat welcoming space for anybody that came in to learn and heal and grow. And yeah, I was ready to sell it when I did sell it, but every once in a while, I regret walking away from that lovely community I built. They were my family. It was such a beautiful thing.
And it strikes me that you were involved with taking care of the body, and it must have made what you were observing with Justin even harder to fathom.
Absolutely. It was really hard to watch when he really stopped taking care of himself. When we first got together, he had these stretching routines, and I'd massage his arms and shoulders and forearms because they were a mess. And I got to teach him some things to take on the road to help him feel better, even down to a spiritual aspect of meditating and being mindful, which he was really opposed to, you know, at the beginning. He's like, no, I'm a Southern man. I don't do this. But he was really open to learning some of these things because he was noticing a difference. That was so cool to see. But it was even harder to see him going from that being so accountable to literally not taking showers and not, you know, losing his glasses and breaking all of them and losing his Rolex watch and all these things kind of crumbling that he took so much pride in at one time. And then have evidence of it too in pictures. Like, I can barely stand seeing pictures of him from mid-2018 onward, because it is not the Justin that I had been with. It very much looked like a different person to me. Very different energy. It's, yeah, a deeply saddening thing to see that happening in real time as you're trying to patch up. And as Justin would say, stop the bleeding. I felt like I was patching up holes in a boat while it was just sinking, and I couldn't move fast enough. And I had a baby too. I was starting to get a lot of concerned fans writing me on social media saying they had to leave the show because it was too disturbing to see him in the way he was. And there was nothing I could do because I was doing everything I could do. But to know that other people were actually recognizing it as well was really hard. It started in 2017 before Etta was born and really picked up the pace and got really bad during COVID. Obviously, it made it worse with all the isolation, canceling of tours. It just sped up the momentum.
I'm a real Los Angeles.
Steve Earle with I Don't Care by Justin Townes Earle from Steve's tribute album, JT. It was released January 4th, 2021 on what would have been Justin's 39th birthday. Steve said he spoke to Justin the night he died and told him he'd support him if he was ready to go back to rehab. Steve, in an interview, goes, I said, do not make me bury you. And he said, I won't. He was just one of those people that never felt like he was enough. And then, of course, he left behind his wife and his baby. And we'll hear how Etta is coping, how Jen Marie is coping. And in this segment also, that in the midst of her pain, she wants to help others. More with Jen Marie Earle.
I remember talking with Justin about how his father wasn't there for him growing up. And the sad irony is that now he can't be there for Etta. Did he ever talk about being worried that that would happen or what kind of father he'd be?
Great question. He had so much confidence at the beginning before Etta was born, especially. I remember confiding in him that I was worried about the type of mother I would be because I didn't, my mom wasn't around much from the age 8 on, and I tried to live with her. We had a real and still have a real kind of tumultuous relationship where I've looked to her to be there and she's not been there. And I was really worried. I didn't have the models. I didn't have females that I respected in my life that had been there for me at all until I opened my business and I created that for myself. And I had these mother figures coming into my life. Justin was just so ready. He couldn't wait to practice and not do all the things that he had learned not to do, as we both talked about a lot. That was our biggest lesson, is I'm going to do it all opposite than how my family did it, your family did it. And he gave me a lot of power. He was, look at you, like you take care of people so well. It's just going to come naturally. And he gave me a lot of confidence about it. But that really quickly went away. He wasn't there for her birth. He was in Europe and he was struggling already at that time. He was hard to reach after she was born. He missed plane flights coming home from that tour and didn't get home until 2 weeks after she was born. Even though everyone he was surrounded with in Europe was like, oh my gosh, he's so excited. He was so excited during that time, as I recall. And on my end, I wasn't hearing from him. And I think the fact that he wasn't able to get back in time and my father was there instead, it really changed his confidence. He felt really terrible deeply inside that he couldn't fix it and he wasn't there for this monumental moment. And it really shifted the relationship with him and my father, where they were really close before. Suddenly it just was different. And he was scared and I could see it. Things really changed after that. But it was wild because a few months before, he was the one exhibiting all this confidence and surefiredness that we would do it right because our parents maybe didn't do it wonderfully with grace.
It's a rough road you went down with Justin, but now I see you use his Facebook page to help other people. How were you able to get to that point?
It's been really hard. Those 3 years prior and that ending the way it happened took away so much of my confidence because I tried so hard to change that trajectory and nothing worked. There was a lot of that, if I could have, would have done this or that, and all this thought process that is really not beneficial at all was going on. And I struggle with that, but connecting with people and helping people, and even the way that I am on social media, has really given me a sense of purpose that I needed to find again. We don't have a lot of people in our life, and I'm just starting to feel like I can talk about all of this and make sense of it. Like even meeting people here in our community has been tough because I didn't want to share who my husband was. I didn't want to share how and why he wasn't here. But deep down inside, that connection and sharing is everything. It's really unhealthy to close off, but I just wasn't ready yet. And now I'm ready. Now I feel I can make a difference in other people's lives, which then in turn makes a difference in my life. Connecting with people on the internet started last winter when I signed in for the first time and started reading messages and posting about recovery and some helpful daily tips. I couldn't believe the response and how many thousands of messages I started getting where people were saying, I'm sober now because of Justin's profile is suddenly putting out these messages about recovery and sobriety and making me think about it. I'm sober now. And that's amazing. I wasn't expecting that at all. There's been hundreds, thousands of people that have written me and I've connected personally with. it's so fulfilling. It's so fulfilling. If I can, like I said, change one person's thought for even a minute about partaking in drugs and alcohol, or maybe even how to help their partner or be supportive or navigate it on their own, because that side of the picture is also incredibly hard. Awesome. I'm game. And I really want to help people. I want to create a nonprofit that I thought was going to be focused on helping people with addiction recovery. But as I've come to realize, supporting widows, supporting people left behind, navigate the things that I've had to navigate, like paying off medical bills and credit cards that were left that were his doing. I had to go to probate court to get Etta's guardianship situated. It costs like 20 grand. There's so many pieces of the puzzle that I'm still trying to navigate. And I can only imagine how much it could be helpful to help other families navigate rent and groceries and all these things that immediately, you know, and therapy, affording therapy. That's been a challenge for Etta goes to art therapy and it's a couple $100 a session. I'd love her to go weekly, but I can't afford it weekly. So I'd like to set up this nonprofit to help people post overdose specifically, because it's so common now, especially with the rise of fentanyl in our nation. I'm excited to continue it and see what else I can do. Hopefully I can really make a difference on a giant scale.
Here we sit across the table from each other, thousand miles from both our mothers, barely old enough to rust. Here we sit, pretending both our hearts are anchored, taking candy from these strangers amidst the diesel and the dust. And here we sit, singing words nobody taught us, drinking fire and spitting sawdust, trying to teach ourselves to breathe. We haven't yet, but every chorus brings us closer. Every flyer and every poster gives a piece of what we need. And the sand that they call cocaine cost you twice as much as gold. You'd be better off to drink your coffee black. I swear the land, it'll listen to the stories that we told. God bless the busted boat that brings us back. Morning's rough, don't give a damn about the mission. Has no aesthetic or tradition, only lessons never learned. And I'd had enough about a month ago tomorrow. Pardon holds no trace of sorrow for the bitter and the burn. And the piss they call tequila, I'd rather sip this Listerine I pack. But I swear we've never seen a better place to sit and think. God bless the busted ship that brings us back. Just go. Be better off to drink your coffee black. But I swear the land and listen to the stories that we told. God bless the busted boat that brings us back. God bless the busted boat that brings us back.
Jason Isbell with New South Wales about a drug and alcohol fueled tour of Australia that he took with Justin Townes Earl before Jason got clean. I'm Marcy Finkelstein. This is Words and Music on Community Radio WMNF. You're listening to my conversation with Jen Marie Earl. When Justin died in 2020, he left behind Jen Marie and their then 3-year-old daughter, Etta. And in this segment, Jen Marie talks about Etta.
How do you raise a daughter with a father and even a grandfather who have had addiction problems and try to keep her safe?
Yeah, that's a really hard one that I'm learning right now as I go, because this little girl is so smart and she's been asking very specific questions since it happened. He was 3 and a couple months when he passed, and it started a couple months after he passed. I was expecting these questions to come when she was like 7 or 8. She's asking them now, and that's super hard. We listen to music a lot. She's very musically inclined, and she listens to all of the words, and she memorizes all of it. She's got Justin's brain. He was a treasure trove of stats and information. It was crazy. She has that. So she hears a lot of this music talking about whiskey or getting high. A couple of days ago, she said, Mom, we were listening to Zach Bryan. She loves him. And she said, what does getting high mean? What does that mean, Mom? And I was like, well, you know, about the drinks that we hear in the songs you've asked me about too, or the drinks we've seen like on TV for watching a show and someone's drinking a wine or a beer, you know, from a beer bottle, because I don't drink at all. She's never seen me take a sip of anything that she can't have. So I've said those drinks and some substances that people put in their bodies actually completely change their brains. And that's why they call it high, because you're just not thinking straight. You're not thinking properly. They affect the way that you act. And we watched this show called Heartland. It's not a children's show necessarily, but it's filmed in Canada, not far from where we are. And she loves horses. She rides horses. So Etta loves this show. But there's been a couple of times where a character has become drunk after drinking these drinks in these weird bottles that she notices. And she's like, why was he acting like that? He didn't usually act like that. Why did their attitude change? And then they were slurring and they were having a hard time walking. So I kind of pieced it together with things that she's seeing. I don't know how to navigate it, though, to make sure that she's soundly feels like these things are not things she wants to partake in and she's not curious in them. That is my hope, that I can deter her from even going in that direction of like, ooh, Mom says not to do this, so I want to do this. She doesn't know that drugs killed her father, or drinking put him in the hospital many times. And right before he died too, he was in the ICU, which a lot of people don't know. He was in the ICU for 10 days from aspirating. And he almost died, and he had his lungs scraped and this whole bit the month before he passed. His death was so related to alcohol and where he was at that time. It wasn't just the fentanyl suddenly killing him. So she doesn't know that. She knows that he made some choices that led to his body not working anymore. And that's as basic as I've been able to knock it down to, but it's also a lot of information for a 5-year-old.
Would you say she's a happy kid? She's a serious kid?
She's a really happy kid. She's very deliberate. She was very timid till about last year. That's how Justin and I are. We're very like, I'm going to stand with my back against the wall for a while, and I'm going to watch everything that's going down. I'm going to pay attention to everything that everybody's saying. I'm listening. I'm taking notes. And then I'll participate when I feel like it. She pays attention. She decides when she's comfortable or if she's not comfortable. And she's very deliberate, but she's very full of joy and happiness. Also, obviously, a lot of deep sadness that comes with not having a father. This man that is so large, he comes on the radio so much. Like this morning it happened. I was taking her to school, and it happens a lot when I'm taking her to school. And I feel like I said to her, I was like, this is the way he can be here for us now. And it's so cool that these last few minutes before I drop you off, that he just suddenly comes on the radio. I didn't put him on. He came on the radio. So she sees this larger than life, perfect, amazing, talented, charismatic, beautiful guy. But there's this deep sadness. He's not here. She never got to know that man. She didn't. She barely got to know him. He was not there for her for a lot of reasons. His job that first year, but then those last 2 years, because of everything else, he couldn't be around her. It was impossible. He was interested, but he wasn't choosing to, because he was so taken over by his vices. That deep sadness is really tough to watch as a mom because you can't fix it. That is going to be her work for the rest of her life. And that's really, really hard to swallow.
Dashboard Confessional and Justin Towns Earl's Mama's Eyes, an album of covers that lead singer Chris Carrabba says were his influences, artists who influenced him. And Justin put out that song when he was just 28. Now for the last part of my conversation with Jen Marie Earl, and she talks about fans again and the role that they can play with artists who are battling addiction. This thing about fans wanting to bask in the limelight of this star. He wasn't impressed by them. I read somewhere where he called them germs.
He did. He called them germs. He didn't pronounce it like germs. It was funny. Germs. I don't know. Yeah, he didn't like that fawning, that adoration that they had for him. I don't know, the super fan, you know, like gets giddy and acts weird and wants to please him and wants to tell him all the things that will make him feel good about himself and tell him what he wants to hear kind of thing. But that's not anything he wanted to hear. He just wanted to be treated like a normal person, like he treated everyone else. He wanted to be known as a writer and a good person, like an interesting good person. He did not want to be that man on stage at all.
So is he reacting to us or us to him? For example, when I saw him in 2010 and he'd recently been arrested and he jokes about it and the crowd is cheering, is he doing it because he thinks that's what we want? And if people hadn't cheered, that could have made a difference?
Absolutely. He liked that banter, that back and forth, and people kind of egging him on a little bit, even down to people requesting songs and him telling them to F off on stage. You know, he liked that back and forth, even when it went south, especially if they liked it. He was a performer. But I recall very vividly, too, to tie it into the last years of his life around the state of Lost Causes when it was coming out. I remember him saying that he thought people were bored of him being happy. People liked him struggling. People liked him when he was drunk. People liked him better when he was having a hard time and getting arrested and having all these awful things happening. He really started to make himself believe that fueled his success. the Saint of Lost Causes was gaining some more momentum and more interest than any of his other albums in the last 5 years before. He was attributing it to his alcohol and drugs consumption and all of these awful things going on in life, like multiple arrests happen, which weren't necessarily advertised. But yeah, it was heartbreaking to hear that because, again, I think it was him processing, like trying to make that right, these wrongs that he had been doing, cutting himself down to people really liking this messed up version of him that gained more attention. It was not true at all. I think people love to see him happy and see him shining and see him taking pride in himself, in the way he looked and the way he dressed and the way he was on stage and seeing him shine. I think of pictures of him in 2014 and 15, 16, 17, like he was so handsome and he looked different than any other phase of his life. You can just see the difference in him. So the story he was telling himself was so far from the truth. But unfortunately, you know, somebody sent me, we ask people to share videos and stuff of Justin from their shows and ask them to date them and all of that. And I had previously said online, please don't share the pictures with him with the shirt off in 2019 and 20. Please don't share him on stage so messed up and slurring his words. Pay attention. That was a part of that big conversation that I think you were seeing play out on Facebook. I was just, please don't, please think about it. He was a human being. Notice what he was acting like on stage and then decide what you're going to send me. Because at that point, I'd been getting some pictures of him and videos of him, obviously very inebriated, and people were cheering him on and laughing out loud and egging on the whole situation. And it is so hard to watch. It's impossible. I will hide every one of those. And I will personally write the person and say, without shaming them, but like, do you not notice that he was struggling? Do you not see it? Were you really there just to be that entertained and that's all that mattered? He was in a real struggle right in front of their eyes and people were laughing. That is heartbreaking. That's a tough aspect of all of this for me to see and address. I guess you got to think most people at shows, the majority of them are drunk. So they're also not thinking right. I guess some of them might be off the hook for that reason, but that's not okay. It's not okay at all. And I'm only asking that people see him as human, too, especially if they claim that they're big fans of his and that they really cared for him and they miss him and all these things. I would hope that people going to his shows weren't there just to be entertained. They were there to experience him as a person because he gave way more than just music on stage. He gave his whole soul. He connected so much. He said such profound, interesting things. He was so whole in so many ways. He had so much more to offer than just getting up stage, singing songs, leaving. That's not the type of show that you were going to see when you went to see him. You got something different out of it.
Last night a storm blew through our town. The power went out, the rain poured down. For an hour or so, the wind blew fast and mean. I walked around after the flood. Piles of trash and pools of mud. But up above, the prettiest sunset that I've seen. I woke up to the news. Fate ain't something you can choose. And them Harlem River blues was all too real. I couldn't even cry. I was sad but not surprised. That muddy water was always lapping at your heels. So rest easy, brother, and travel light. You had your mama's eyes, but you were your father's son. Lay your darkness down, shadows lie. from. Can't be filled, and hope is in the heart of the beholder. So I'll remember you, I guess, at your kindness, at your best, and pray you share the weight upon your shoulders. So rest easy, brother. Had your mama's eyes, but you were your father's son. Lay your darkness down, shadows lie upon the ground, to show us where the light is coming from. Lay your darkness down.
Justin Townes Earl closing out Words and Music with Wanderin'. Mark Arelli before that, and his song for Justin, Lay Your Darkness Down. Thank you so much to Jen Marie Earle for your openness and your deep compassion that calls you to help others in the midst of your own struggles. And thank you to WMNF listeners. It's your support that keeps Justin's music alive right here at WMNF Tampa. I'm Marcy Finkelstein. I'll see you next Saturday. Have a wonderful week. Stay tuned. 5 minutes of NPR News headlines and then the 60s show.
Oceans, I've seen your mountains high. I've been lost inside your cities. I've seen the underside. Yeah, I know the troubles that plague a troubled man, but they can't catch me. I'm a wandering. No, they can't catch me. I'm a wandering. No, they can't catch me. I'm a wandering.
This is WMNF Tampa.